Yes? Just like a little girl today. But even when Srimati Radharani was just a baby of a few days old, her consciousness was simply fixed upon Krishna. And what's the story in Barsana? That the little girl that was found by Bishop Manu Maharaj, so beautiful, so delicate, she could not see. She was blind at birth. So they had a big ceremony, and all the Brijbasis came, and Krishna stood. He was just a little boy, and he stood just next to the cot of Srimati Radharani. And then Srimati Radharani opened her eyes, and the first thing she saw was Krishna. And actually speaking, the only thing she saw was Krishna. And the only thing that she sees is Krishna. In all tenses, past tense, present tense, future tense, only seeing Krishna. This is the love of Srimati Radharani. Now, if we want, Prabhupada explained when one Radha asked me that if we want to give a flower to Krishna, we should place it in the hand of Srimati Radharani. We should offer it to Srimati Radharani. And she will give that flower to Krishna on our behalf, and Krishna will accept it from her hand. So in this verse today, Swabhavani Tvam Ajito Dvahane Vidarbham.
Swabhavani Tvam Ajito Dvahane Vidarbham.
Gupta Samitya Priti Pratana Pratibhi Parita.
Gupta Samitya Pratana Pratibhi
Parita. Namat Chichaya Magadendra Balam Prasaya. Mam Rakshasena Vihinod Vahavir Yasul Kam. Tomorrow. Who remembers what yesterday's verse was about in Rukmini's letter to Krishna? Does anyone remember anything from that? Yes, who?
She was mentioning about her previous pious activities. If she has done enough, then she should get Krishna in return.
Yes. So this is the result that she's desiring. Because nowadays everyone thinks, whatever I want by the strength of my desire, my determination, then I will attain what I want. And if someone isn't able to gain something in the material world, a very contemporary philosophy is, it's because actually they weren't serious, practically speaking. They didn't really want it enough. But it is not a fact that what we get is simply based on our desire. If it was simply based on our desires, there would be no poor people. Everyone would be a billionaire, because that's what everyone desires. It is not that our work alone or desiring alone causes the results of our activity. Rather, it has to do with Krishna's sanction. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya. So this verse in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes that. Krishna is equal to everyone. He doesn't award favorite, his favorite beloved people wealth, and the people who he doesn't like, he doesn't award them, he doesn't give them poverty. So if it doesn't depend on our work right now and our desire, and it doesn't depend on Krishna's discretion, what does it depend on? I mean, Krishna's favoritism, what does it depend on? And it depends on the previous karma that we have in our lives. Some people are even born into this world, they never have to work a day. They're just born with so much wealth, their whole life is spent just managing the wealth that they have. They don't have to work for it, they just have to manage the finances that they have. And other people, they have to work and work and work and slave. And practically speaking, they remain completely impoverished and in debt. It has to do with one's previous karma. So what is the best thing to gain from previous karma, from previous activities, from acting piously in this world? Because according to our piety, we get results. If we act in a very good, exalted way, we get good and exalted results in the material world, and therefore we become wealthy, we become famous, we become beautiful, etc., strong, intelligent. This is all the result of material piety, material good activities performed in previous lives. And when one is born with a deformed body, or born with not very much intelligence, or some physical impairment, or not beautiful at all, or infamous. This is due to impiety. Impious, bad, hurtful, ugra karmic activities from this and previous lives. What does ugra karma mean? What does the word ugra mean? Yeah, well, fierce, horrible activities. It's ugra. Ugra karma is when you're at Nityananda Priya's house, the sound of the tram making the turn. That's ugra. Just that rubbing of metal against metal. Painful. That causes us difficulties. Acting like that causes us difficulty in future lives. So one simple byproduct, this is just an aside, of transcendental knowledge, is that it will make people very careful how they act. If we know that we are souls, that we are eternal, if we know that we migrate from one body to the next according to how we live our life, and if we live our life in a good way, we gain, and in the next life, or even in this life, we enjoy ourselves. And if we act in a ugra, horrible, fierce way, giving trouble to others, being hard-hearted and selfish, and harming our own body and the bodies of others, maybe you can put the volume down a little. Then in the next life we have to suffer. So again, and then a next logical step, if we understand that this law of nature takes place and it's irrevocable, it's unbreakable too, then naturally one would think, well, who is the person, or who is ensuring that the law is being followed? In the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it describes how if you study this, the principles. What is the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? What is it about? The three modes of material nature. So the three modes of material nature, they are controlling everything in this world. And there is one verse, or one of Prabhupada purports, he says, if you meditate upon this, you'll come to deep spiritual conclusions, understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How is that? You meditate on everyone being controlled by either goodness, passion, ignorance. How does one come to the conclusion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even through his own intelligence, through speculation? And the answer is that if these modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are controlling us, and not only us, everyone and everything in this world, and it is unstoppable, who is enforcing this? And what is the nature of he who is enforcing this type of law that you cannot escape it? Even if you want to, even if you're cunning, and even if you have a criminal mentality, you cannot escape this law. So first of all, how intelligent is the enforcer of that law? And how powerful he is? If you could make, just sometimes you see on Indian trains, there's all these rules, and they're really nice. And if you follow, if these rules were followed, a ride on an Indian train would be so pleasant. It took intelligence to make these simple but common sense practical rules, but there's no enforcement. They don't have the power to enforce it. But Krishna's enforcement is unstoppable. We cannot break these laws and get away with it at all. Well, there has to be a witness. Well, Krishna is the Upadrashta, Anumanta. He's the witness. Upa means near, and drashta means seer. He is near to us in our heart, and he sees everything that we do. So on a material level, understanding that makes us very careful of what we do. We can't get away with anything. Of course, when one has some devotion, he's not trying to break the law, rather he's trying to please that Supreme Person. That's devotional service, acting in such a way that he will be pleased with me. Putting him in the center of our discriminations, how we should act. Act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. So in the previous verse, Rukmini Devi is saying, if I've pleased you, O Lord, by any pious works, by sacrifices, by charity, by rituals and vows, and even by worshipping the demigods, Brahmins and Gurus, then, O Lord, I don't want anything of this world as a result of my activities, my pious activities. What do I want? He says, please, Rukmini says, please take my hand, you marry me. Because, as Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explained in his comment on the previous verse, because indirectly she's expressing her love for Krishna. Because she, her consciousness is filled with love for Krishna. And this consciousness of being of full of love for Krishna, wanting to serve and please him, is going to cause Krishna to come so swiftly to her rescue, all powerfully to her rescue. It is due to her love. So in this verse, now we'll talk about that, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a comment here that we'll read before we read this verse, or part of it. He says, what happens if Krishna says, yes, I accept that according to your previous pious activities, that I accept you, I'll take you as mine according to your previous pious activities. You've done so much, obviously. But now that you have been given to Sisupal and everything's arranged in marriage, what can I do? So in response to that, so theoretically, yes, I'll accept you, but it's already arranged. So what can I do? So Rukmini, in this verse, suggests very boldly to Krishna just exactly what he can do. And the verse says, O unconquerable one, who is always going to get his way, and none of the armies or Sisupala or any of his friends are going to be able to stop you. O unconquerable one, tomorrow, when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive unseen in Vidarbha and surround yourself with the leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaidya, Sisupal, and Magadendra, Jarasandha. Crush them and marry me in the Rakshasa style. Kidnap me, winning me with your valor. So she wasn't shy at all about it, suggesting exactly how Krishna should accomplish this. Because she was a Kshatriya girl. Very, Kshatriyas have determination and they are very resourceful. Intelligent, in this specific way, resourceful too. So we'll read the word by words. Swabhavani, tomorrow, Twam, you, Ajita, O unconquerable one. Because if Krishna sets his mind on doing something, he's unstoppable. Now that is the devotee's meditation. How can I influence Krishna so that he becomes inclined, if that he puts his unstoppable will upon doing what? Think about it. What would you like Krishna to do? Wait, just think about it first for a second. What would you like Krishna to do? What would you like him to do? If he places his unstoppable will on doing that, whether you are qualified, pavitra or pavitrava, whether you are qualified or unqualified, clean or unclean, it doesn't make any difference, because he can remove any obstacle and just take you and pull you towards him. Or whatever you desire. Maybe someone desires to become an astronaut and go into outer space. Krishna can easily do that if you like that. Would you like to be the first Hare Krishna devotee to circle the world in a space module? Okay. It's not a bad idea. First Hare Krishna devotee in space. No, actually, there have been many Hare Krishna devotees in space now that I think about it. So whatever we do desire, then the next part of the meditation is how to make Krishna inclined to give us that. And these are the secrets. Open secrets, but secrets nonetheless of devotional service. How to make Krishna inclined. Yeah, very intelligent. Thank you. He's not going to say it out loud because it's such a deep secret. So, O Ajita, O unconquerable one, Avahane, at the time of the marriage ceremony, Vidarbhan to Vidarbha, Gupta, unseen, Sametya, coming, Pritana of your army, Pratibhi, by the leaders, Parita, surrounded, Namatya,
crushing.
Chaidya,
Sisupal.
He's of Chaidya, he's from the place of Chaidya. Magadha
Indra,
and the king of Magadha,
who
is Jarasandha. Balam, the military strength. Pasahaya, by force. Mam,
me.
Rakshasena,
Vidina.
In the Rakshasa style.
Udvaha,
taken marriage. Virya,
your prowess.
Sulkam, the payment for whom? So here is the translation. Oh, unconquerable one, again. Tomorrow, when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive unseen in Vidarbha and surround yourself with the leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaidya and Magadendra and marry me in the Rakshasa style, winning me with your valor, your heroism. Here's the purport. As Srila Prabhupada points out in Krishna, the Krishna book, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rukmini, born of royal blood, certainly had a brilliant grasp of political affairs. She advised Sri Krishna to enter the city alone and unnoticed, and then alone and unnoticed, and then surround himself with military commanders so he could do what was needed. Notice, as we were mentioning before, we fix our mind on what we want. And then we do make a plan. How are we going to get it? That's practical. So if we want Krishna's mercy, we should think very deeply, carefully, how we can get that mercy. And then, after we have desired, and then we think, then we act. Act in such a way, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if you want to, don't try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Act in such a way that he becomes attracted to give you mercy. Is that difficult? Only for Mahatma. Because you're Mahatma, of course, it's not difficult for you. But for me, it's very difficult. Why? Because I have my own plan. I have my own desires. And my desires, so influenced by the mode of passion, so influenced by the mode of ignorance, they are very difficult to overcome for me. So I have my plans and my desires, all with me in the center, so difficult to overcome. And that tends to rule how I act. And therefore I get many results in this world, but I don't get that result. That result that in the heart of my hearts that I really want. So she advised Sri Krishna to enter the city alone and unnoticed and surround himself with his military commanders so he could do what was needed. And what was needed? To crush Sisupal. And Magadha Indra and Jarasandha. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur compares the coming fight to the Lord's churning of the ocean to extract the goddess Lakshmi. What canto is that described of the Bhagavatam? Eighth canto, yes. The churning of the ocean of? And do you know what the eighth item that came from that? Lakshmi Devi. And do you know what canto it was in? That's in, you know? Eighth canto, eighth item, And what chapter of the Bhagavatam is this described in the 8th canto? Someone take a look. Gorgeous Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, would be gained in the coming turbulence because there is... You cannot get what you want on the spiritual level without a churning. The heart has to be churned. Sometimes... Well, isn't that amazing? And how many principal gopis are there? Yes. And when we sit before Prasadam, what do? We ate. No, you can't do it. Today is... Well, isn't that also amazing? We won't ask what month it is. Everything is eight. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8. Okay. So there has to be a churning of the consciousness to get something. We have to take, we want this, you know, I want this. It may not be what pleases Krishna, but I want it. And yet, this is what pleases Krishna, and you put the two together, and it's a battle. It's actually a battle between the devotees and the demons, and a churning has to take place. And what comes out first when the ocean of milk is turned, one of the items? Poison, yes. There's some poison that has to come out. It can't stay in there. But then wonderful things come out. Amrita. What does mrita mean? And what does amrita mean? If we want to become deathless, we have to go through the process. So the goddess of fortune, Rukmini Devi, would be gained in the coming turbulence. Let's read what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues with. Rukmini proposes a method in this verse by saying, O Jitta, Krishna implies that no one can possibly defeat Krishna. If Krishna comes to our rescue, even if there is poison, nothing, no one can defeat him. Rukmini said, at the upcoming wedding, you should first enter the city unseen. Without troops, without your armies, you first come in. Unseen, let no one see you. Once having entered the city, then you should surround yourself with your military commanders to show your strength. If you don't do this, then it will be difficult to enter the city quickly. If you come in right immediately with your armies, then it will be difficult. There will be a fight. So you enter first and then let your armies come in. Because it will be difficult for you to enter the city quickly if you don't do it this way, for the troops of the others, they will accost you outside the city. When they see the armies marching, they'll fight with you. After entering the city, however, you can say that you have just come to see the splendor of my marriage ceremony. And then the army will have no reason to fight with you. Then you can whisk me away at your leisure. If they suspect an undesirable turn of events and start fighting with you, however, you should show your heroism, just as you rescued Lakshmi from churning the ocean. Then you should forcibly kidnap me, the reward for your show of strength. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, expanding out the words of Sri Rukmini Devi. Let's go. go to the next verse. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit the goddess Girija. Purport. Clever Rukmini anticipated a possible objection on the part of Sri Krishna. He certainly would not object to subduing rascals like Sisupala and Jarasandha, but he might be reluctant to injure or kill Rukmini's relatives, some of whom may block his way to the palace inner sanctum, where the women were protected. The procession to or from the temple of Girija, Durga, would provide the perfect opportunity for Krishna to kidnap Rukmini without harming her relatives. O lotus-eyed one, this is text 43, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet, and thereby, by doing so, they destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have then become weak from the severe penances I will perform. Then after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. So I'll read that again, because this is actually the mood, the seriousness, the greed, this is the mood that's actually required to get the mercy of Krishna. One has to want it very, very deeply and only we have to want Krishna's mercy. So much so that nothing other than pleasing Krishna appears valuable to us. Is that easy? Not for a conditioned soul. Why? Because daivyesha gunamayi mama maya daratyaya, that the forces, Krishna's forces, the three modes of material nature, or Maya's forces, indirectly Krishna's, they are very powerful, very powerful, very difficult to overcome. They make us think that something is important that actually is not important. Something is temporary, and it is dukkha yonaya evate. And when one is tightly in the grip of Maya, that's all that seems important. Krishna explains this point in the Bhagavad Gita, or in answer to Arjuna's question. Atake no priyukto yam chapam purusha anicham apivarsnayam baladivinayosita. What is it that forces us, that makes us act against our will, even doing things that are harmful to us, against exactly what we want? What is that force that does this? This amazing force in the world that makes us act against our own best interest, even against our own wishes. And Krishna says, what? Kama esha. This is kam. Kama esha, krodha esha. This is anger. The mind focuses on something due to the mode of passion, due to the mode of ignorance. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajagano, born of the mode of passion. And this, not anything else, is the enemy. He explains. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajagano, samudbhava, mahashano, mahapapma, vidyenam. You should know that this is the enemy. The modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. Of course, the mode of goodness is also an enemy, but that's not one that I have to worry about very much. I don't have very much association with that enemy. So what to do if we find ourselves in the grip of the enemy? Well, first of all, we have to know, I'm in danger. If one is caught by one's enemy, what will the enemy do? He will kill us. Or steal, plunder, everything. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami in Manasiksha, he says, be so careful of these enemies that will plunder our whatever wealth we've worked so hard to gain in our life. Like thieves plundering persons who are wandering in a lonely forest. The demon of the thief of lust will steal away our hard-earned spiritual realizations, the jewels, the treasures that are so rare to find in this world, of what is valuable, what is not, the realizations that we have. So what prescription does Raghunath Das Goswami give when we're attacked by the thieves of this Kama Asia, Krodha Asia? What prescription does he give? That's what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. But what does Raghunath Das Goswami? Because the problem is that when you're in the grip of I want something, and the mind is focused on that, it's very difficult to say, oh, yes, now I should regulate my senses and therefore get transcendental knowledge. But Raghunath Das Goswami gives a very practical recommendation of what to do. First thing, which he doesn't mention, is that you have to understand, I'm in danger. And then the second thing, you have to say, I don't want to be in danger because I'm going to lose everything. And in these two, especially the second one, is the crux of the matter. Very difficult to say, I don't want this. Because until we make our decision that we don't want to be caught by the thieves and plundered, then we won't take the remedy, which is very, very powerful, actually. And anyone can do it, practically speaking. It is so powerful, it brings immediate relief from the thieves. And what is that? Gaitini, Mataji, we heard you say. That's Krishna. Agapit. Instantly he will release us. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also adds in his comment on this that you cry out to the devotees, call out their names, but loudly. Louder than what?
The mind.
Yes, exactly. Louder than the mind. This is the prescription given by Raghunath Das Goswami. And if somehow, and this happens in life, if somehow the thieves of material energy come and we're not really sure whether we want to call out for help or not, even the great Christian sadhu, knowledgeable sadhu, St. Augustine, in his Confessions, he confessed that at one point, after he had heard about Lord Jesus and he wanted to surrender to him, he prayed, please, O Lord, take away, because he had a girlfriend at that time, Please take away everything from me so I may surrender to you. But not yet. That's a position that we sometimes find ourselves in. Our calling out is neither loud nor very sincere sometimes. And even if that happens to us, and we lapse in our sincerity, what should we do? Yeah, exactly. We just have to get up, embarrassing as it is, to have been revealed as in Prabhupada's words, as a rascal. Revealed as a rascal again, and try again. And try again, and try again, and try again. Depending more upon Krishna's mercy than our own abilities, try again and try again. And if we never give up, eventually we will attract Krishna's mercy to us and say, look at this poor fellow. He's not very well equipped, is he? But he's sincerely trying again and trying again and trying again. Perhaps that is our hope. But Rukmini was very serious immediately. And she's saying, I'm not going to take any substitutes other than your mercy. I don't want anything else other than your mercy. And to have this specific relationship with you, I will not marry Sisupal, or I will not marry anyone in this world. If I don't get your mercy, I will perform austerities until I become so weak, and then praying for your mercy, I will leave this world. I will become weak from severe penances. Then, and she's thinking, if I have performed so much pious activity, but it is obviously not sufficient to gain you as my husband. This is what's described in the Bhagavatam, and earlier in the 10th canto about the boys, Krita Punya Punya Janma Koti. What's the verse? Itam Satam Brahmasukana Bhutya Sakyam Vicharu Paradaivatena. Anyway, it says, for births after births, it takes this kind of desire that I want Krishna, and I don't want anything else, to gain the purity of heart. It is not cheap. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it easy, but he has not made it cheap. Because it depends on one thing, a simple, focused desire to serve Krishna. And I don't want, won't take anything else. I only want this. And by chanting Krishna's names without offense, and chanting sincerely, Namasraya Kore Jatina Tumi, and taking shelter of Krishna's names, giving up our hope and our own abilities, and resting all our hope in the unlimited power of Krishna's names, then Krishna can do so many impossible things, things that are otherwise impossible. So this is the most encouraging thing, and it can be also the most discouraging thing, because sometimes we hold up a mirror and look at ourselves and we see our own insincerity, and that can discourage us. That no, I'm not like Rukmini Devi at all. I'll take anything, practically speaking, as alternatives when things don't go my way, when my desires on the material level increase. Should learn how to turn that side, the discouragement, our weakness, into strength by taking shelter of Krishna, knowing that practically speaking we have no hope other than surrendering to Krishna and placing ourselves under his hands, in his protection, and keeping in the association of good devotees. What hope do we have otherwise? If I try by my own power, again and again I see that my own power, my own sincerity is so limited, and I'm so filled with so many material desires, subtle, gross. I have greed for so many things, but not greed to serve, love and serve Krishna. So what is that called when you have that realization? Yes, but what is that realization called? It is painful, but what is that realization called?
Humility.
Humility, yes. And according to the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is the prerequisite. The poison has to be churned out. It can't stay inside. The poison is what? Our materialistic desires to enjoy in the material world. As if we were the center, as if we could be the enjoyers of the material world. But we can't. Because to be an enjoyer, you have to be a controller. And to control, you have to have power. Power, so therefore the demonic mentality is just that. Ishwaraham, aham bogi. I'm the controller. So I can enjoy. But we can't. So that's what the demonic mentality sets itself out in doing. Trying to control for the purpose of enjoyment. But there's so many other competitors in this particular game of trying to enjoy and control the material world. And some of them are very heavy, very powerful. You cannot win. And ultimately, there's the time. What Krishna does, he sets them against each other. All those with demonic mentalities, he sets them against each other. And the result is they annihilate each other. That's what happens. I'm the most powerful. What do you mean you're the most powerful? I'm the most powerful. I'll show you how powerful I am. Well, I'll show you how powerful I am. And then boom, boom, boom. Because in this world, in fact, no one is powerful. Everyone is simply insignificant. And it's very hard to accept this. But the insignificant soul, who is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size, he can take shelter of Krishna and take his true position. Thereby be happy. Let me just read there's one more verse in this chapter. I'll just read that and then we'll finish this chapter. And we'll begin the next chapter. We'll start hearing Krishna's response to these pleas of Rukmini Devi, saying, my life is not worth anything if I don't obtain your service as your wife. This was her rasa, her desire. My life is not worth anything except for one thing. Still has a value. And what is that one value? That I can do something to take a step forward, and maybe after hundreds of lives of performing austerities, then I'll obtain my goal. It may take me hundreds of lives, but I don't want anything else. I want that. What a mood of devotion. Fixity, of course, is the eternal consort of the Lord and Dwarka. Krishna and Dwarka. But it'll be so interesting when we see how Krishna responds to this type of sincerity, this type of fixedness. Therefore, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Tatra loyam api muyam ekalam. But janma koti, it takes a lot to gain this. But to get the highest thing, Mahaprabhu has made it easy, but again, it is not cheap. So the final verse in this chapter, the Brahman said, because the Brahman had read this message of Rukmini to Krishna, the Brahman said, this is the confidential message I have brought with me, O Lord of the Yadus. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances and do it at once. Purport. When the Brahmin arrived, he broke the seal of a confidential letter written in the privacy of Rukmini's quarters and meant only for Lord Krishna. By using the term Guya Sandesha, the trustworthy Brahmin, personally selected by Rukmini, here affirms that he has not violated the confidentiality of this message. Only Lord Krishna has heard it. Since the marriage of Rukmini was fast approaching, Sri Krishna would have to act immediately. The term Yarudev indicates that Lord Krishna, as the lord of the powerful Yaru dynasty, the best, Yarudeva means the best of the Yarus, should make his decision and then mobilize his followers if necessary, but immediately. And we'll see how Krishna reacts to this furtive plea of Rukmini Devi. Thus then the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 10th canto, 52nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Rukmini's Message to Lord Krishna. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Madhavanji. Would you like to tell us about this name meaning of Krishna?
There's so many different styles of marriage. One is Gandharva style, one is Rakshasa style. One is so many different styles. I need to speak to you for a moment. But Rakshasa style specifically means kidnap. Gandhava style means, I think in the forest or something, there's an exchange of garlands. These are different types of marriage ceremonies that are accepted in the Vedic scriptures. But kidnap is not, is one of the legitimate styles then, but it is not accepted in this day and age, by the way.
The Christians many times they say they have this statement, not by works, that not by works can you attain this.
No, isn't it not by works alone?
Yeah.
Alone. Yeah. Yes.
And how do we reconcile? Because this is also the thing you've been speaking about a lot, that we cultivate as much sincerity as we can possibly muster.
And then act on that sincerity too. What there's a logical term that's necessary but not sufficient. So our endeavor is necessary. Generally, of course, Krishna is independent. He can do it as he likes. But our endeavor, the sincerity of our endeavor is what makes Krishna inclined to award us with his causeless mercy. So our endeavor is insufficient. There is nothing actually, in fact, we can do to make Krishna shine his full mercy on us, because it is causeless. It is springing simply from him. By his free will, he gives his mercy. But there are secrets involved in this, how to make Krishna inclined. But in fact, there is nothing actually that one can do on one's own to force it, him to bestow his full mercy upon us. So does that answer your question? That our endeavor is also required. The example that I always give in this regard is the child. He wants to lift a weight, big heavy weights. But he's only 3 years old. So he can't do it, in fact. So he struggles. He can't do it. But it is due to the sincerity of his struggle that it attracts his father to come and say, okay, let's try it now. You try again. And the little boy goes, yes, this time I'm doing it. But it's the father who's pulling it up. And he's actually doing the work. But if it wasn't for the boy's sincere endeavor to do it, the father wouldn't have an inclination to do it. So who's the one who's doing it? You can say, well, it's the father is doing it, but you could also say the boy is doing it, because it's the boy's endeavor that makes the father do it. But if the father doesn't want to do it, the boy can't force him ultimately, but it's a natural inclination of the father when he sees the sincere desire that he does it. But still, the child can't force it. So, we should do our part. And the causeless mercy part is up to Krishna and the devotees. The example the Prabhupada would give is that there is such a thing as an honorary degree in the university, that someone gains a university degree with no work, not having attended any courses. But that's, we shouldn't set our life, if I want a university degree, so I'm going to get an honorary degree and have to not attend any courses. I tried that when I was at the university, not attending any courses, and it didn't work. I had to attend courses. From? No one escapes from?
Krishna's law, the laws of nature are unbreakable.
Yes.
Speaking with strength on that particular point, and how no one gets away with anything. People get away with things in this world because they're enforced. Sometimes it seems to the mind of a foolish person like myself that the punishment or the results of this life come next life.
Or this life sometimes. This point is brought up in the Bhagavatam, and I can't remember exactly where, but an example is given. Just as the winters of the past, we don't know we're moving to winter now from which season? From autumn season. So on one level, we don't know what's going to happen on the future, but as the past indicates the present. So the present also indicates the future. As the autumns of the past indicate the winters of the past, so similarly the autumns of the present indicate the winters of the future. So similarly, seeing how people have a particular consciousness, particular abilities, particular debilities in the present, that indicates the activities that they have performed, that they must have performed some activities in the past to have given them this in the present. And similarly, when someone is performing a similar activity in the present, it indicates what's going to happen to them in the future. So therefore, the point is made that you can understand from the present, the past and the future. Because someone must have performed specific activities in the past to get this particular mentality and results in the present. And similarly, you can understand what's going to happen in the future just by a little intelligence. So an intelligent person looks at sees the troubles in the present, understands that must be because I've performed specific activities in the past, and therefore he's very careful how he acts in the present because he doesn't want to have to suffer from the same thing in the future, or worse. So that's how the Bhagavatam describes it. Or one takes the alternative, thinking, well, I just got here by chance to this circumstance. That's a very hard one to prove. You have to have a lot of faith to accept that it's chance, because we don't see anything happening by chance.
Well, one thinks I deserve this
It's unfair.
Or I'm getting away with something, see, I just said this isn't work, and now I can do that, is that like this?
Yeah.
So if there's nobody up there keeping any kind of record.
But then how do you explain the present? And then how do you? Where do we see anything organized going by chance? It's very unlikely. Does a scientist that say it's all based on chance? Does he let his paycheck come by chance? Does he do his scientific experiment by chance? He should try that. He should say, we want to discover something wonderful, and what we'll do is take all the ingredients in the lab and just throw them up into the air and see what wonderful thing happens by chance, or see how many times. This will be a good lifetime experiment. We can see how many times it takes to throw all the chemicals in the air before a human being arrives, or something. Or we can, there's different ways to do this experiment. So theoretically, everyone will say chance, but practically, no one believes it. Because they don't allow that principle to act in their own lives, and their beloved children. Why do they send their children to school? The scientists, if they believe in chance, why don't they let their children be educated by chance?
So there's an absurdity of work that people are not intelligent enough to
cover. Well, I don't know about not intelligent. I would say they have a vested interest. The clouds are vested interests. Clouds your ability to see things clearly, because you don't want to see them. So I'd also like to make a point, just in ending, that it doesn't mean, because you know, this is the most wonderful thing, her consciousness is the most wonderful thing, and my consciousness isn't on that level. Clearly it isn't on that level. I've looked at the mirror and I've seen what my consciousness looks like, and I can't be on that level. I don't have the sincerity to surrender on that level, and I can keep trying to surrender on that level. No. There are processes under guidance to take where we actually are and live in such a way that we will gradually become purified. But that should be done under guidance, not by one's prescribing for oneself. That should be done under guidance. Okay, let's end now. It's already late. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Muni Devi ki jai.